Well, I love hearing those stories about children that are being born and babies and all that kind of things happening around. I hope that you've had some good days as well in your home and in your life in the last little while. This morning, we're going to begin a new sermon series. So it's going to go for the next about a month and a half. And we're going to be working on the issue of stewardship. And I'm hoping that as we work this series through, you see stewardship in a brand new light, in a way that you perhaps have not ever thought about the issue of stewardship. Primarily, when we talk about stewardship in the life of the church, is we try to talk mostly about money. And today, we are going to, in this series, we're going to widen that gap in a large, large way. So this morning we're going to be talking about the stewardship of time. And if you'll take your Bibles and turn with me to the book of Psalms, or the collection of Psalms, Psalm 104, we're going to read just a few verses, chapter 104, 19 through 23. Picture of God's creation design of time. Verse 19, he made the moon to mark the seasons, and the sun knows when to go down. Isn't that nice to know? You don't have to wake up someday and say, sun, time to go down. He knows. You bring darkness, it becomes night, and all the beasts of the forest prowl. The lions roar for their prey and seek their food from God. The sun rises, and they steal away. They return and lie down in their dens. Then people go out to their work, to their labor, until evening. Well, I want to find out something this morning. It's the yellow mic, Doug. So I want to find out, just what do you think the perfect age is? What would be, if you had a chance to do this age, what would be the age you would prefer? What age would you like to try out? Come on.
I have been unhappy with and happy with various ages I've been so far, and I think every age will have its own thing. I'm not looking forward to any particular age.
Okay, so we have, she would prefer to be non-committal. All right, she just... Like he put a microphone right in front of my face, and I had to talk. Okay, so Bob, you want to try it? What age would you like to try?
Well, I'm pretty content. So 67.
You are 67.
Yes.
Oh man, that's a pretty impressive age to get to. So you're content with 67?
I have to be.
Yes, you do. You have. This isn't a sermon about contentment.
Okay.
Yeah, what's the alternative? Well, the alternative is that in this story, you could go back if you wanted to. Or you could go ahead if you'd prefer. Do you want to try again, or are you good?
Sure, I'll try again.
Okay.
19 was a pretty good year. That's a nice night here.
Hey, that is an excellent answer. 19, that's a good age. Ah, I'm going to try one of the Dixon kids. Which one will try me? What age would you, okay, they're all pointing down the row. Okay, tell me what age you, grab the microphone because I can't reach in that far. Any age you want, just dream it up. That is an excellent rationale. I remember wanting to be done with high school. And I also remember when I was done with high school, it was the best day of my life. I was so happy. Virgil, what age would you prefer to be? Well, not to die, but to live. 35. 35 is a good age. Let's try. Chantel is going to give me a good shot here.
Well, my grandma was 99. I think 100 would be kind of fun.
Fun?
Kind of.
How do you know it would be fun?
I mean, you get a letter from the queen.
All right. So we've had a variety of different ages that we would try to take a shot at. It's always interesting to me when we do this that people who are on the younger end of the scale always think about what it would be like to be a little older. And people who are a little older often think about what it would be like to be a little younger. I don't know what, did I ask anybody who was 35? What? Yeah, I should have asked that. Anyway, we want to kind of, we think about the age. For me, if I was to pick my very best age, I love the ages between 8 and 12. When I was a kid, 8 to 12, so I'll pick an age 10. So I love that age because when I was growing up, you had absolute freedom. They didn't worry about things like where you were going and who you were going to be with. It was just get out of the house and make sure you come home sometime before it's dark, right? That was my mother's approach. And so we could do anything, go anywhere, just do all kinds of wonderful. I loved being 10. It was just fantastic. I had all this freedom. But what happened? It doesn't matter what I think about when I think about being 10. I can't go back there. I've tried. My wife didn't care for that little cycle. You can't go back. Now, I remember, I can even conjure up the feelings of what it was like to be 10. But I can't go back. Now, some of you think the perfect age is still coming, like when you get out of high school. I like that one. Maybe you're 15 and you think 21 is going to be the perfect age. Because then I have all this other kind of freedom. Doesn't really matter. You're not 21. You have to wait until you're 21. But maybe you could speed up time. Wouldn't that be fun? To just be able to kind of go into the future? Maybe you could slow down time. Doesn't matter what I want. Doesn't matter what I feel. Doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what I do. Time is just time. And time does what time does. It never speeds up. It never slows down. It never goes backward. It never, oh yeah, it does go forward. I love the movie. My favorite movie of all time was Back to the Future. Now, for some of you who are younger, you might think, oh, what is that movie? But I like the movie for this reason, because it goes back to 1955, and I was born in 1954. So it was the year after I was born, and so it's all the things I remember. Marty McFly is able to go back in time while still remembering what it was like to be in 1984. Has it been that long already? Wow. Remember Doc Brown and his space-time continuum? But the movie is pure fantasy. No one's able to travel backward into time, and no one is able to travel forward into time. It doesn't matter what happens. Time moves forward at exactly the same rate of speed. Doesn't matter if there's a cataclysmic world war or that you are late for an appointment. Time remains the same. Time does not treat the most important people in the world any differently than it does the people who are the least important, because time waits for no one. But we've been given time. Time is a gift. There's nothing you can do to earn another second of time. No matter how noble or wonderful you are, no matter how incredibly deep or profound your need is, you will not be able to add another minute to your day. Every day has the same time. We get worried about the future, and so in our worry of the future, we wonder what's going to come. And Jesus says, who of you by worry can add a single hour to your life? Here is the key principle of stewardship. You're going to hear this over and over again for the next few weeks. Here's the key principle. Everything we have and everything we are is not our own. Let's try it again. Everything we have and everything we are not our own. It's a gift of God. So let's say it together. Everything we have and everything we are is not our own. It is a gift of God. What does that mean? After church today, you're going to go home to your house. It's not your own. Well, most of you already know that it's not your own. You know it's the bank's, but we're talking on another level here. You're going to drive in your car, but it's not your own. You wear clothes this morning, but they're not your own. Your bank account is not your own. Your personality is not your own. Your dreams, your hopes are not your own. Your body, your soul, your eye color, your job, your giftedness is not your own. Your emotions are not your own. Your family, your today, your tomorrow, they're not your own. Psalm 50, verse 1 says this, "The earth is the Lord and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." The writer of 1 Chronicles 29:14 says, "Everything comes from you, God. Everything comes from you. I actually don't own anything." The other day, we have this little foster grandson that our daughter has. And the other day, I was over there visiting with the family. And this little guy, he's only two, he was sitting on the stool beside the table. And my wife, Lori, reached over to take his little cup from him and to go fill it up. And he looked at her, and he looked at all of this, he went, "Mine!" Oh. We'd never seen him do that before. Just the flat of his hand against the table. "Mine!" That's how we feel about life. It's so startling funny, we had to stifle a laugh, but it's how we live. We may not slap the table, but everything we have is mine. I own it. It belongs to me. And one level, that's true. It's in your possession. It's yours to use. You've earned it by your work. You buy it at a store with your money, and we take it to our home, and we give it to our family, and we go on our vacation, and we bought it because we like the way it looks and the way it feels and how it fits and how it tastes. Yet it is not ours. Everything comes from God. Did any of you ever decide to be born? Did you ever have any input as to how you would look? You were being passed down the manufacturing line of who you are, and you said, "I would prefer green eyes. I want to keep my hair for life." You know, those are the things that you got when you go down the line. I had nothing to do with my blue eyes. God gave me a personality, a mind, and a soul. I did nothing to get those. He gave me strength, and he gave me skill to work. He directs my paths. He shows me his ways. He teaches me his will. He created the plants and the animals that feed me and clothe me. He's the creator and the originator of it all. Nothing is mine. So here's the key again. Read it with me. Everything we have and everything we are is not our own. It's a gift of God. What's happened is that God has entrusted us with everything we have. He's entrusted us with all we have and everything we need for life. He didn't just give it to you. He entrusted you with it. He gave it to us with the understanding that we would use it for his purposes, for his glory. He trusts us to do what we should do with all that he's given us. Some of you may have received an incredible, a significant inheritance from your family, from your parents in your life. Maybe your family was a well-to-do family and you were given an inheritance of $500,000 or $1 million or maybe even more. And you know that it came as an incredible gift. But you really didn't do anything to get that inheritance except to be born into that particular family. You've been entrusted with the gift. But the people who gave it to you, your parents, didn't entrust it to you so that you could blow it on extravagant living like the prodigal son who took his inheritance and wasted it on wine, women, and song. It was given to you as a trust, as a gift to use in such a way that you would bring honor to the family that gave it to you. You were entrusted. To be entrusted with a gift means that you were asked to be a steward of the gift. You don't own it, but you're responsible for it. It's how I feel about the money that you people give so graciously to Bonavista Church. I take it very seriously, and we try to be good stewards, to use it in such a way as to give honor to God who gave it to you. Well, every one of us was born into time. We've been entrusted with the gift of time. None of us did anything to get the gift of time, but we live inside of the time. Our days are numbered. Some of us will live a long time, and some of us will live a short time, but the question is not how long you've lived, but how you've used the time entrusted to you. Someone once said that how you spend your time is more important than how you spend your money. Before creation, there was no sense of time. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 and 2. Chapters 1 and 2 outlines the process of creation and the beginning of time. The Bible references time several thousand times. Creation sets up a cycle of time. The first is the daily cycle. Night and day, dark and light, the 24-hour daily cycle of the sun and the moon. The second was the creation of the weekly day cycle of days. God created all the days in a rhythm or a cycle of 6 days, and then on the seventh day, God rested. Ever think about that? Was God just kind of so worn out from creation that he had to rest? It's hard to imagine an exhausted God. It's not that God was so exhausted from all this hard work. What God was doing was setting up a rhythm of life that he was wanting to teach us for us to live by. Hebrew religious practices and rituals were established as part of this cycle, the rhythm of daily prayers, 9, 12, 3, 6, and so on. The Hebrews were learning that there could and should be a sacredness to their understanding of time, just like there could be a sacredness to their space, the temple. Time and space set apart for the holy, sacred service of God in the daily and weekly practices of living. Third, God created the seasons, fall, winter, spring, summer. And these became the seasons for planting, growth, harvesting, and fallow. From the earliest of times, they learned that even the land needed to rest from its productive work. The Hebrews attach annual feasts and festivals to this growth and this harvest cycle. And then finally, there's the life cycle of the human being. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures, yet the best of them are trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. For those of us that are just getting a little older, well, all of us are getting a little older, but for those of us who are feeling that, where did the time go? Have you ever found yourself saying, time just seems to be going so much faster these days? It went where it's always gone. It went ahead. Time never looks back and wonders what happened, but we do. As time marches on and we move from life to death, we become part of the generations that we were going that went on before and that we build on the previous generation. We become part of that great cloud of witnesses to life and to God that Hebrews 12:1 talks about. But we want to press time forward. We live in times where we think we can compress time. We press as much as we possibly can into the time we have, in the belief that we're making the most of our time. We can fly from here in Calgary to Australia in 15 hours, while Australia is 18 hours ahead of us. So on the return home from Sydney, Australia, we can land in Calgary before we left. Talk about compressing time. We stuff as much as we possibly can inside of our schedule, requiring us to have a phone calendar that will ding several times throughout the day to remind you of the things that you've committed to. If I were to come to you, you'd say, we live intensely busy lives. If I were to come and say to you, well, how are you today? Most of us would respond, busy. Wouldn't it be funny if somebody said to you, oh, just lying around most of the time, doing nothing. Even if that's what we're doing, we still say, I'm busy. Because busy qualifies us as being valuable. If you're just lapping the way, well, what worth are you? It's good to be productive, actually. It's good to accomplish. It's good to achieve. It's good to be successful. It's good to work hard. But in all of that busyness and all of that compression, we've lost any sense of the rhythms of life. We've eliminated the ebb and the flow of life. Did you know that just by the introduction of the light bulb, we've eliminated 2 hours from everybody's sleep per day? Our technology of light and speed, of computers and cell phones and calendars and clocks, have destroyed the rhythms of the night and the day and the weeks and the months and the seasons. And we've replaced it with a justification of our busyness and an excuse for the way we use and even abuse our time. We no longer move within the constraints of time. Instead, we're the ones trying to move time. But the Bible sees pattern and design in time. We live in time with the time we have. God created everything. He's been busy building and designing and creating. And then he rested. See, there's nothing wrong with being busy. It's just that he learned the rhythms. He taught us the rhythms to rest. He practiced Sabbath. Even though God created and practiced Sabbath, we don't really read anything about Sabbath until we get halfway through the book of Exodus. The people were encouraged to practice Sabbath back in chapter 16, and then in Exodus 20, we encounter the Ten Commandments, which is the first time we get any real instruction on the Sabbath. The Sabbath is the fourth commandment, but it's also the longest of the Ten Commandments. It's almost 100 words long, where several of the other commandments are only 2 or 4 words long. But what is interesting is that the Ten Commandments were given to Israel after they had been enslaved and then set free from the Egyptians, where they've been in slavery for 400 years. When you're a slave, do you think you get to pick the hours you work? When you're a slave, do you think you get to pick a schedule that you can work at? You get to pick what kind of work you do. Slaves work at exactly the level their enslavers want them to. They're enslaved to their enslavers. When Israel was finally set free, Sabbath became the celebration of their freedom. They were no longer slaves. And Sabbath today is intended for you to receive a gift of freedom, to break the bonds of our slavery to our busyness, to our driving need to achieve. We always associate the word worship with Sabbath, a day set aside for God's purposes. In a wonderful book called A Royal Waste of Time, Marva Don says this: to worship the Lord is in the world's eyes a waste of time. It is indeed a royal waste of time. By engaging in it, we don't accomplish anything useful in our society's terms. Worship is a royal waste of time, but indeed it is royal, for it immerses us in the regal splendor of the King of the universe. Sounds almost sinful to speak about wasting the time. How is wasting our time a good stewardship? What it's doing is asking us to reconsider how we consider time. Sabbath reminds us that our time is the Lord's time, not ours. That we steward time by ensuring that He is in the time that we spend. We make time sacred when we waste it on Jesus. It's like the woman who poured wasted, expensive perfume on the feet of Jesus. It had no other purpose except to express worship to Jesus. She wasted all of her money in worship on Jesus. Doesn't accomplish anything apart from worshiping the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings. There are two kinds of time. Chronos time, Kairos time. Chronos and Kairos are simply two Greek words that express two different dimensions of time. Chronos is the name of a watch. It's the name of time. It's where we get the word chronology. Things happen in order. First this, then that, then the other. All falls in a nice sequence. Chronos is the kind of time I saw this morning. When I got up, and before anything else happened, I went into the bathroom and I looked in the mirror. And I saw Chronos time expressed in my face, the lines, the creases, the absence of hair that I once had on my head. Chronos is the kind of time when you look at your children and realize you have grandchildren. Chronos is the kind of time you see when you were in grade 6 and then you realized you're graduating from college. You look back and you wonder how it all happened, how it happened so fast. Kairos time is the time of God in history with his people. Kairos time is Jesus breaking into the brokenness of our lives. Kairos time is our awareness of sin and the need for forgiveness. Kairos is that moment you see God speaking to you, loving you, caring for you. Kairos time happens mostly in the small moments of time. Kairos is holiness sneaking up on you, the conversation you had in the car, the sacredness of a wedding, the moment you touched your lips to the communion cup. Stewardship of time is being attentive to those moments of Kairos. As Frederick Buechner put it, that if we really had our eyes open, we would see that all moments are key moments. Kairos is holy time, God's appointed season. Ecclesiastes says there's a time for everything. There's a time for everything, a season for everything. The question I want to ask you this morning is, what time is it now? What season is it now for you? Paul in Ephesians 5:16 gives us a clear answer. Make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. King James Version would say, redeem the time. That's stewardship. To be given an opportunity and to make the most of it in the time you've been given. In your business, it's easy to miss the Kairos moments, to miss the time that God is actually giving to you. In the hectic pace of life, it's critical to keep your eyes open to the Kairos moments, to the opportunities. Well, if the days are evil, then the opportunities that are given to us are to counteract the evil. As followers of Jesus, you and I are always looking for those Kairos moments, those sacred moments, moments where we can show some grace, where we can do some good, where we can speak the truth. Sometimes as I've had opportunity to do. It means sitting with someone who's in the midst of awful, heartbroken grief. Sitting in the quiet with someone, listening as they wrestle with their faith. It's sitting by my son's bed as he's about to fall asleep, talking to him about the way of Jesus in his life. It's about taking a young man under your arm or a young woman and walking with them down the road of discipleship toward Jesus. It's about stepping into a place where evil has been reigning free and expressing the love of Jesus and pushing it back. It's being a steward of the time that you've been given. Everything we have and everything we are is not our own. It's a gift of God. We've been given a gift of time to be stewards of the time that we've been given. To be a steward of time means that I'm going to be intentional about how I use the time I've been given. How do you prioritize your time? What do you choose to do? Where do you spend your time? What do you give it to? Is it in the Kairos moments? Let me make a suggestion to you. Take your calendar. I'm old school. I have a paper calendar. Yes, they do make them. You have to now order them. So I take that. But maybe take your phone. Most of you have a calendar on your phone. Take that. Now take that and say, I'm no longer going to look at this as my calendar. I'm going to look at it as a theological document. Try that. What does this theological document say about the way I understand the sacredness of time? What about this calendar talks about the Kairos moment? What about this theological document that I'm holding in my hand expresses my practice of Sabbath? Are you able to waste time in sacred rest? Is worship at the heart of your Sabbath practice? We live as stewards of the time we've been given. None of us know how much time we have. But it's never been about the amount of time you've been given. It's about how you use the time you've been given. Does it bring glory? Does it bring honor to the Lord of Lords and the King of Kings? Does it lift up the Lord of time? And so this week, as you enter into the rhythm of this week, the 7 days that God has given you, as you enter the rhythm of the 24 hours that he's given you in this day, as you enter into the rhythm of the month that stands before you, I urge you to take a look and see, where are the Kairos moments? Where is God entering into your time so that you can be a good steward of the time that he's given to you?